Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Coffee with Centuro. I've got my colleagues here, Zane and Siraj. Morning, guys. And I'm, of course, Ben.
Morning.
And this is our weekly video series, podcast, if you're listening to it on Spotify and so forth, where the three of us just sort of get together and discuss business in a bit of an informal manner where we can add a bit of opinion and thought in behind it and sort of discuss some of the business going on around the world and just take a moment to learn a few of the things that are going on with also just hopefully a bit of fun and banter mixed in there.
Should I just interrupt you now? Let me interrupt you. I know it's 1 week later, people are watching this, but I thought I'd go with the presidential theme of just interrupting you while you're speaking and not allowing you to finish what you're saying. Should we do that and see how well this session goes? We'll just keep interrupting. I'll just talk nonstop since
I'm we'll just keep talking.
Don't provide anything too definitive or value adding when you do interrupt. Just walk around in circles in the conversation and then we'll this will eventually turn from a 30-minute podcast to a 3-hour one.
Cool. It was bizarre. It was absolutely bizarre. I know I'm going off topic, but it was bizarre. It's probably old news by now, but yeah. Anyway.
That's all right. It works well. Following one of your previous sessions where you had a nice thread through all of your stories, I'm coming with chaos. So it probably works that well as a nice allegory. You know, keep it balanced. That's what the people want. I thought I'd start off with just having a look. So I saw a report of people looking in and suggesting, obviously, we're in a housing bubble at the moment and that, or we're coming into quite a risk of a housing bubble. So I don't know if you guys have looked much at housing pricing and so forth at the moment, but there's obviously a lot of pent-up demand. A lot of people are now considering, almost similar to what we said in a previous episode, where looking at moving out, getting into a bigger house because they need more space, home offices, kids are at home a lot more, etc. So there's a lot of sort of pent-up demand. You know, there's in the UK at least, there's no stamp duties, there's a lot of benefits to buying now, so there's a bit of a rush. So housing prices are going up sort of 5% and have been going up consistently quarter over quarter for quite a while. So there's the report looked at the number of cities that were in likely to be in a bubble and likely to there be a future issue, because the other part of it is also rent prices are falling. So that looks like there's going to have to be a correction, especially once the impact of income differences start to come in. So I thought I'd throw a few of the key cities that are considered to be in a housing bubble at you, and then just sort of get your thoughts on the housing market overall. But a few of the top concerns are Hong Kong, it is up towards the top. Munich, Frankfurt and Warsaw in Europe are considered to be quite at risk. And then similarly still in Europe, Paris, Zurich and Amsterdam are also among the ones quite considered to be in a bubble when you start looking at a few of the other economic factors. Interestingly, ourselves in London and then a number of other places are considered overvalued, but not in a bubble. So it's not likely to be a massive correction. So places such as Tel Aviv, New York, San Fran, Tokyo are all considered to be overvalued cities, but not likely to be in a bubble pop. Do you guys think it seems like an obvious thing that there's going to have to be a correction soon, especially once sort of the impact of the unemployment and so forth starts kicking in, and you know, it's not sustainable that there's all these low interest rates, there's all these government benefits. It's going to have to go back at some point, right?
Yeah, I think it will. I think these things are cyclical. It all will come around again. We've got very short memories as people generally. So when we have a recession, we all go like, we're in a recession. But we don't go. But if you looked at it, there are patterns where we go on these down, up and down turns. So I think it's going to have to correct itself. But I think that it also lends itself to a larger question: is the overvaluing of city, like the really big global cities, and how the new working from home and shared office spaces will change that. Could there be a correction in the downtown being as overpriced as it is because the demand might dip and people might be able to work further away?
Yeah, I think that's spot on with the cyclical point there, Siraj, because I mean the whole point of the government initiatives coming in is because people have been hit. There is a attack on the economy, people are going down, so they offer benefits to keep the balance. So there's going to be a rebound. There's always unintended consequences to any of these measures. So it will go up, it will go down. And I think, as we've discussed before, if people do start to move out of the cities, like you've just said there, with the prices, that'll also have an impact. And maybe that'll be a longer term impact than just correction. Maybe it's been so overvalued for so long now because everybody wanted to be there. Maybe this house prices will now spread out into the different regions. It will go slightly down in the major cities and slightly up in the suburbs. So you could see a flattening of the curve, if anything.
Yeah, well, that's what flattening this article also mentioned. Yeah. It's all about flattening the curve. That's what this article also mentioned, though, was because a lot of the rich inner city people are now also moving out because they don't need their city center lifestyle anymore. It will have an increase in the suburban areas because they'll probably go out and buy nicer houses and bigger properties. And then the money just sort of moves out of the city into these smaller areas. So then their prices start rising, where before probably the economic average of a family there was lower. So then do they start going a bit further out and so forth as well? So there might be a bit of a ripple effect on as the wealth transitions out and out.
I often feel that, you know, people make money in polarizing times. I mean, they make money all the time, but if you can time this right, that's the difficulty. But you just kind of have this feeling there's going to be some people that are going to make huge amounts of money and other people are going to lose their shirts. And that was shirts.
Sometimes no bleeping needed there.
No, there's like a pause in the internet. So I think there's going to be for people in this, and I do feel where the opportunity is especially in it's definitely a buyer's market right now in South Africa, that is. But the problem with a lot of people who can buy is they have to sell their current house. So they're going to lose on their current house and they're going to gain on their new house. It's people that are first-time homeowners that I think are going to actually get the best benefit because they don't have to sell at a loss or sell at a lower margin than they would have hoped. They can just capitalize on the good pricing right now. Yeah,
it's a good indication. I have a friend partway through buying a house, and I was almost considering, I'm like, yeah, there's these benefits, but we're also probably in a bit of a fluctuation up. Is it worth waiting? But I think it's one of those things where you just probably need to jump in, similar to the stock market, just get in and then deal with it almost. So interestingly, part of the other impact of everybody moving out and no one being in the city, and this is, again, more related to us in London in the UK, but Fuller's, the pub franchise, a lot of venues obviously all around, are saying they're probably going to have to furlough or make redundant about 10% of their staff purely because of working from home, because of the impact it has on city centre pubs where everyone would go for a pint after work. That's about 500 people. And the CEO was putting it down to working from home. And he said even the impact of Boris's recent announcement of, all right, try work from home again, sort of the slight backstep on that, he said it's just going to have a massive impact and there's not going to be anything they can do. At least 10% people in city centre are going to have to be made redundant. They'll try and minimise that. And obviously he said all the correct things around that. But the realistic situation is without the people in the city centre, a lot of these places are just going to have to lose staff because the demand's shifted. Interestingly, yes. Wetherspoons has said the same thing, but because Wetherspoons over here, again, another big franchise, have a lot of airport bars. They're getting 50% cut because there's no one in the bars in the airports anymore, which would be big business, like going and grabbing a pint before a weekend away and so forth. They were always full. So that's going to be a massive hit as well, just the impact of this.
Yeah, I think all businesses that kind of revolve around that inner city environment, so the pubs, the dry cleaners, the, you know, boutique little cafes, all of these kind of companies, even the larger ones, even the ones with like bigger chains that service like worker lunches, okay, they're all really going to, yeah, they're all going to suffer a lot from everyone working from home. And I think we've got to a point, I don't know how it is in a lot of other countries, but I read an interesting thing where, so there's rumours there's going to be another lockdown in the UK, and if not a national one, they're coming up with a regional process, but they may have a 2-week circuit break is what they're calling it. So 2 weeks of lockdown lower the cases and then deal with it afterwards. But a few commentators have said the government has been so up and down, so back and forward with what they communicate. Go to work, actually go home, now go back to work, now come back home. You know, some employers have spent up to £400,000 on making their office spaces COVID secure for workers, and suddenly everyone has to go work from home again, and they're already struggling with, you know, revenue. So I think people are saying Boris just needs to decide, do we want to save lives or do we want to save the economy? If we want to save the economy, we have to kind of do whatever we can to minimize the impact on deaths, but accept that there will be more cases, there will be more illnesses. Or let's just say we're saving lives, it's going to hit the economy, all these businesses are going to suffer. Let's put together, however we can, if it's even possible, I don't know, a package to support all of these businesses for the next however many months. You need to have a direction. Then if you adapt based on how things go, fine. But this is so wishy-washy back and forth. The uncertainty means no one can plan anything. No one knows what's coming in the next month, where to put your resources. So it's all a bit of a mess.
It is. I mean, you were talking about those pubs laying people off. Yesterday, Disney announced they're laying off 28,000 people in the United States because of the lack of foot traffic to their parks and things. Yeah. I mean, it's still hitting. And I think the COVID thing has really become, it's an economic pandemic more than anything else. And it really is. The only difficulty is like, if they're acceptable losses, whose losses are they going to be? Your family, my family? Yeah. That's where it really becomes a question of this. It is a tough one. I wouldn't want to be in their position to have to make those calls, I must admit.
No, I think especially in such an almost PC world as well, because obviously when you start talking about going to wars and stuff, acceptable losses become part of it, and it's for the greater good and all sorts of things. But now in this world, like, it does become, you can almost about the individual as well, because everyone has such a voice. Cool. I guess on a slight, just on working from home, and I think this came out a few weeks ago, but I thought it was quite interesting because I saw it on LinkedIn and a few people sort of praising it as, you know, almost about time someone said the opposite of what everyone's saying about working from home and how great it is. But the CEO of Netflix, there's just a small quote from a large interview that he did, was quoted saying that working from home is purely a negative. So they said, have you seen benefits from people working from home? And I'm quoting the interviewer here, and he just said, no, I don't see any benefits. Not being able to get people together in person, particularly international, is a pure negative. I've been super impressed with people's sacrifices. It's anticipated many companies will shift to working from home approach for employees even after this. What do you think? He said, if I had to guess, the 5-day work week will become 4 days in the office, 1 day from home. I bet that's where a lot of companies will end up. Do you have a date in mind for when your workforce will return to the office? He said, 12 hours after a vaccine is approved. We're back. So I thought that was interesting. And that, you know, it's almost to the other point of, yeah, we've got to adapt. We've got to have a plan in place. Like Zane said, all right, if this is going to be the way, this is it. But I guess there's also that point of, at some point, will people start coming back? So do you plan for that? How do you plan? You know, you're talking about like city center caterers and so forth. Like, if all the workforce came back eventually, slowly over time, then the people who will make the money in this polarizing time, as Siraj almost said, will be the caterers who are able to stick around or plan for it. Because then once people are back in their offices and they need it, if there's a reduced number of options, then they're just going to have to go to a few players that manage to get through, right? So I guess this is where the risk of being an entrepreneur and a business owner comes in, of to a few players that manage to get that, almost that moonshot, make that gamble on that one path. And you see the success stories of who picked the right path. You don't hear as many of the ones who picked the wrong path. But what do you guys think in terms of, Netflix is obviously a massive global brand, being one of the few people to say, nah, don't like working from home. We're going back as soon as we can.
Yeah, I must admit, I think we've mentioned it a few times in previous episodes where I think there's efficiency, but there's the spark and the collaboration that you miss from being in an office. There's definitely something to be said for that. Having said that, I do feel that we all noticing the efficiencies of being able to work from anywhere, and to not sound so typical new norm, but there is a new norm of I can be anywhere and do my work. I think there's a, I was chatting with someone last week where we, you know, he's a journalist and he's a magazine, now digital magazine editor. And he was like, oh man, I've been doing this for the last 15 years. Everyone else is just caught up with the fact that we can work from anywhere. So I don't know, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. I think it's going to be down to personal preference. It depends on the nature of the business as well. There is definitely a need to work together, I think. And like you said, there's a lot of benefits from working together. On your opportunity point, I think we should all take lessons from Seraj. You've got to diversify your portfolio, have a number of businesses and pieces in different pies. So when one does suffer, you've got the others to keep you going. Then you can ride the wave. And then when the opportunity comes back in the future, you then reactivate it and you're there when other players are.
I mean, just so we know, Netflix's share price went from in the last six months from $364 to $500. I never had Netflix before lockdown, and then I thought, I might as well get Netflix, you know, I'm going to be locked down. I think he's benefiting in some ways.
Benefiting from the customer, I guess. What are you watching on Netflix, Siraj? What's been the best value for you?
I'm late on the curve, but Ozark. I absolutely love Ozark. Yeah, I don't know if you guys have done that.
No, I haven't yet. Been highly recommended, but not yet. So I guess maybe there's more of a thread through my things than I thought. But in terms of companies slightly adapting to the situation, Google just had its hardware event around its Pixel phones and so forth, I think yesterday or the day before or something. And their new flagship phone has actually been designed to be cheaper for the economic turndown. So they've stripped back from trying to be the flashiest, best version they can. They're running on a slower processing chip than the previous model, keeping some of the key features that they need to be competitive. So they'll be 5G enabled. They've done some improvements to the camera, which is always a big thing for the average consumer. But their flagship main phone now is only going to be about £600. Obviously still not super cheap, but compare that to £900 for the previous Pixel. They've made a very intentional decision to design a product for the current economic market. Do you think that's maybe the right way to go, or is that, I guess there's not a huge amount of pivot you can do in the phone business, but do you think that's going to make sense? Do you think it'll be more attractive to get a cheaper phone for less, or do you think people will still want to fork out a bit more to get the higher bit of technology?
I think it's a good way to go. I'd say
we'll let the Apple man speak first. I'll leave it on.
Yeah, because Apple products are so expensive. Even the iPhone, every time a new one comes out, you're looking at minimum $1,000, which is just ridiculous for a phone. So I think in the current economic climate, a lot of people are saying, I think the new iPhone, the iPhone 12, the release was delayed. I can't remember the reasons why. I didn't really look into it. It's probably due to there's going to be less demand because people are thinking we need to save more. We need to be careful with how we spend our money. So if you do drop the price, if Google have knocked it down to 600, they're thinking, okay, Apple aren't releasing their product. Some people might have been home for ages thinking we need something to spice things up. Let's get a new phone. Okay, it's a reasonable price. I can deal with that rather than $1,000. So maybe there is some merit in it. Maybe they'll capture that market share and get more people to use a Google phone.
Yeah, I think phones are such a weird one because is it a luxury brand? Do you consider a phone a luxury or an essential, right? Because I think, and it's the age old, the wristwatch, the guy who wears an expensive wristwatch never covers it up, right? It's always visible because you got to see it. And then it's the same thing with your new cell phone. You'd never tuck your new cell phone away somewhere. You'll put it on the desk. It becomes the status symbol. But I do, so therefore I'm trying to think on cell phones being a luxury item versus an essential, and how that impacts people's when it comes down to a spend. But I think there's always a way to justify a new piece of technology. It's kind of, oh, I'm at home, I can't go out, I need to have the best technology, and And there you go. You can do that. And I want to ask you a question. How successful is Pixel, the Google Pixel phone, anyway? Are they breaking ground with Apple and Samsung? Huawei?
My exact knowledge of it's maybe slightly dated, but I know Pixel 2, I believe it was meant to be like a level of groundbreaking just in terms of its value and its capability. Google has a number of benefits in the fact that it's coming with a straight, its operating system is just theirs, right? Because it's Android. Whereas a lot of other companies, Samsung and so forth, they put their own layer over the Android operating system, which means they're a lot slower to update. Whereas Google, their phones update a lot faster because they own the Android and they don't put any of the layers on top of it, etc. So there are benefits, and I do remember, yeah, I think it was at least the Pixel 2 got quite resounding reviews and so forth. So I haven't been keeping up on the phone game lately. I did actually just the other day see a new phone that did tweak my interest. I have no need for a new phone, so this is where your luxury versus essential conversation comes in.
Does anyone ever need a new phone?
Yeah, so I'll just see if I can quickly share. I'll just see if I can, might be of interest. So I would say it's an essential in the sense of when my previous phone broke, I had to go back to, I think I had an iPhone 4 or something that was literally just laying in a box, and I had to wait for a repair or a new phone to turn up. So I chucked the SIM in that just so I could text and call people. And it was such a nightmare not to have that at my fingertips, what I normally have in terms of getting on Google Maps when I'm out, or like quickly checking something and so forth. Like, it does feel that. And I'll often, you know, we're on Teams on my phone. I can quickly respond in an evening or something, or ask a question. It doesn't feel like a problem. I can quickly check my email while I'm on the bus or the train or walking around or so forth. So I think there's a level of essential to it. And then there's also a level of luxury in terms of, yeah, you know, what you spend. So this is the new one I wanted. So that this is one phone, but it slides out and you get a second display there that goes, I'll just quickly show you. So that's the actual motion the phone does. And then you've got a full widescreen and all these other features. So that's when I think it gets to probably being a luxury.
But
I think I think you need something of a relative stand. I don't think you can rely on having an iPhone 4 because it's just so far behind of what you're capable of now. But you don't necessarily need to get the new thing every year, although I want to.
Yeah. So that's what I was going to say, though. It's something like that. That looks really different and cool. Yeah. Well, I was actually having this discussion with someone else the other day about phones, and we were getting all nostalgic and reminiscing. What was your first ever phone? And if you look at phones now, they all look pretty much the same. It's just a rectangle or block with a screen. So whether it's the iPhone or Samsung or whatever. So even though everyone thinks, oh, I want to get the new one, it's really cool. How different are they really? Yes, the operating system's quicker, the camera's slightly better, but realistically, there's not that much different. Whereas when I was a kid, or, you know, teenager at school, you had like all the different Nokias, the sleek ones, you had flip phones, you had different colors, different things, Sony Ericsson, yeah. There's so many different brands. Everyone at school had a different phone. You'd be like, whoa, whereas now they all just look the same.
Yeah, I think that's where these sort of designs that we just saw are starting to come out. And obviously, we're also getting the folding phones now where it folds in half and opens up to a bigger display. So I don't think they've quite tweaked onto the next thing yet, but everyone's like fishing around for that next design, right? They even went back to having a flip phone as a novelty to play on that. So I think the phone companies are looking for like, what is the next design? We've made it as big as we can, basically. We've made the thing almost a complete screen. We've got the cameras to a pretty high level. They've now just got to add more cameras. So you've got like four cameras on the new iPhone and so forth. So I think they're at a point where someone just has to come up with something really creative to be the new thing. And I don't know what it'll be. But yeah, I think that's where we're getting quirky designs.
The interesting thing is that the amount of people that are searching, I mean, the stats, and I was trying to see, how much, if I can pull up some stats as we're going along, because we, unlike Donald Trump, we like to fact check while we're going. But I mean, I want you to see how, but I do know, and now I'm going to be like Donald Trump, that most of the people are searching on their phones. So the social media consumption is much higher on phone versus computer. Even viewing of Netflix and all of those things. So the whole horizontal thing makes a lot of sense, because you do want to be able to be horizontal and still type as you're going along. So I think that's quite interesting. And then where I did manage to get some live stats, and it's from a stat counter, global stats, from the market share. Apple, any guess on their market share on mobile? In the North America, I've only got pulled up North America.
I don't think they're dominant anymore. Are they? They're 40%.
So this is 53% right. Apple, and this is as of September 2020. Samsung at 26%. Motorola, which is surprises me, at 4.4, ahead of LG and ahead of Huawei. Google is at 2.2%. So that's just the US, the global stats when it comes to mobile phones.
Yeah, I wonder if one of the new designs, and I think people have done it before, but is a child-focused phone. I know people have done ones from like your phone can just ring off this, can just ring off this or text you or stuff, just from a almost let them go over their friend's house with it kind of use. But we've obviously also looked at And I think part of one of the reasons phone searches are so high, right, is how many people have a laptop per person in their house or a computer per person in their house. So you're in a family of four or five. Everyone's probably in their individual room searching on their phone rather than all trying to be on a laptop at the same place at the table and so forth. And we're discussing previously, like, a problem at the moment with remote learning is families with a few kids probably don't have a laptop per kid, so they can't all be in class. And I've got teacher friends who have said that. It's like they can't hold the kids accountable. That might not be the right word, but like they can't be too strict on the kids because they might not be showing up to class because their brother is showing up to his class on the only laptop they have. So maybe there's an iPad version or a phone for kids out there, and that's a new design and market to tap into that just allows them for school learning. Maybe schools could provide it or something.
As a father of someone who had to go through that, as long as the computer doesn't allow them to chat, because you kind of put them in front of there and you kind of they're in Zoom and they're in class supposedly, but they're busy chatting with their friends on the side, you know.
MSN.
They're actually sitting in class, the teacher can see them, like, hey, you guys are talking. Now they're just going around, they're chatting to each other, man. It's pretty bad.
Yeah, I'm not chatting, just
I'm just doing my work.
Stretching my arms out.
Gone are the days where I used to have to quickly be able to alt tab when the teacher came around to look over your shoulder and switch back to the work. I just have one more thing, which I guess it again does sort of slightly tie. I saw a couple of interesting pivots, I guess we could look. So I was trying to look for some positive and interesting things to discuss as well. So I saw one, OpenTable, the restaurant reservation company based in the US, but then obviously quite company based. They've started working with grocery stores, I believe in the US, maybe a large place, but to allow you to reserve a grocery time slot. So the same way you'd reserve a table, I guess, in a restaurant, so that they could control the social distancing and so forth. So the grocery store can sign up to then build in slots and then just let people reserve them and then just stop the queuing and to have better social distancing and control who's in the store. I wonder how they're controlling how long someone's in the store, because that's one problem, is you quite get a lot of people be like, oh, time them. They're spending 2 hours wandering around in the store. But do you think you guys would book a grocery store slot the same way you would book a restaurant reservation? Or
no, I don't think it works in the same way, because with a restaurant you're thinking, I'm planning this, we're going to go there on this day, we're going to do XYZ, this is how many people we're going with, we're going to celebrate something or just catch up with people or whatever. Whereas with the grocery store, I've run out of eggs, okay, I need to get some stuff, I should get this and this, there's no slots for another 10 days, what am I going to do?
yeah I wonder though if Siraj, you might be the target here with the family. Do you do more of a weekly shop? Because I'm probably maybe similar to Zane, where I pop out for what I need and a bit more dynamic. But are you a big weekly shopper, or
which might suit? We are weekly shoppers, and in lockdown, from lockdown, we used to do it almost together, my wife and I. But then when lockdown happened, I said, look, let's keep the kids at home. I'll go. And when it was hard lockdown, I stood in the queue for 40 minutes waiting to get into the store. So I probably would be that. I would be like, I'll book my slot so I don't have to waste. It's eased up now a lot because of we are level one, so more people in the store. So there isn't a queue. But it is interesting. And I think it's, again, one of those things where the systems that come in place now and the norm of booking slots for certain things you wouldn't normally book, I think you might do that. Yeah. I think people are just not going to want to stand in queues for very long. There's a, if you look at some of the age-old bugbears in life and Universal, it's kind of tax and queues, which kind of would be across the board. People will just go, can I just not stand in a queue? So how do you
people love queuing in the UK though, and when people breach that, you're like, whoa, we broke the queue, what's he doing?
Yeah, because I was trying to think of other examples, and I think I'd be curious to see if that's sustainable, because I think it fixes a short-term problem and social distancing and so forth. And if I knew I was going for a big shop, I would probably do it less, maybe even less so for the queuing, but more so for knowing that the social distancing and the numbers are being controlled. Because if you know they're only letting in so many people in this time slot, you know you'll be in a very controlled. And if it felt like you almost had the whole store to only, say, like a small number of people, where it almost felt a little bit exclusive, like it's just me and these six other families wandering around doing our thing in this time slot, that might feel a bit nicer and a bit more relaxing, and knowing I've got a 45-minute slot to grab my stuff, sort myself out, and out I go. That level of access almost to the place might also be valuable and of interest. And I wonder if maybe what there might be individual shops who take that approach to give you a more exclusive VIP access to shopping. And it's like, you'll be in there, you've almost got your time slot, do what you want, you'll get access, you're not going to be fighting for eggs.
Maybe not grocery, but I think some other clothing stores things could become a premium offering. So I know that it's at some of the really top stores, you can get your own personal shopper, so that if you sit in a little bay and smoke your cigar, whatever you want to do, have a facial while someone runs up and down more the facial than the cigar. So I think there could be something there. And I know in South Africa, when we started coming out of the lockdown, the gyms opened up with booking slots, so you had to book your slot to get in. I think there's something there where it's kind of, especially because gyms again can be one of those crowded space, I'm waiting for the particular piece of equipment. But if I could book it and I know I didn't have to do that, then it could be more efficient. I know that
certain... I wonder if they could get to the level of booking the machines. Like, all right, today I'm doing, I need the bench press, I need this, and I need this. And then you then just have set, like, mate, it's 3:20, it's my turn, I've got three sets to do, off you go. And you just know you got your machine. I think is probably a good shout, yeah.
You're going to walk up to the big guy, big muscular oak, and you're going to
look at my fancy car, and it opens up and it tells you.
My time. He's just going to look at you and go, what?
So the only other one I had, just, and it slightly ties into the clothing thing as well, is I saw it was a Chinese jewelry brand, and they're obviously predominantly store based and so forth, and the way they sort of pivoted was to start live streaming with their salespeople and selling their inventory and stuff, and they turned it into a fairly high commission basis. So they set up a little platform in WeChat quite quickly, and each individual salesperson can set up their own live stream and kind of I can't remember what they called it, but they called it like 1,000 people, 1,000 stores or something like that. And so each person could be their own little store, essentially. So you can be the Siraj store and you can be the Zane store, and you can sell their jewelry and their inventory via live stream through their platform, and you earn, it was 10 to 50% commission. So they're obviously really pushing people to sell aggressively to get that high commission and so forth. But it kind of sounded and reminded me of the old TV sales channels where it's like, oh, we've got this lovely ring, there's only 10 left, call up now and so forth. But it was interesting how, like, almost like you said, the cycle of like almost going back to a similar idea. And I guess it's on a level of, we know that kind of model works because that's what influencers are essentially doing, right? It's like, oh, look at the huge haul I got from Primark. I'm going to show off my clothes to you now. But imagine being able to do that without an influencer needing to go and buy or get those brand deals. It's just the brand setting these people up themselves to go, you have access to our entire inventory, wear these clothes, show them off and try and sell them. And here's a platform to do it. So show them off and try and sell of doing it as well. And almost on the personal shop, you just sit there and watch someone. And I wonder if they eventually get to an interactive thing where it's like, I'd really like to see this red shirt and denim skirt combo. And the salesperson can be in the shop and go try that on. You could do it for a mass crowd where they vote or something, or you have some set outfits they try on. And then if you see it, you like it, you just hit on the platform and sell. That might be the other way of avoiding the crowds, is virtual personal shopping and so forth.
I think it's a clever idea, having kind of combining that TV shopping old school with influencers. Put that together, and you've got a huge,
because they're using their own influencers sales staff, are not, know the product and keep their job. Yeah,
but the influencers aren't never really hard sellers. They kind of, and what makes them really good is, you're following me because of my lifestyle, and I happen to occasionally show you. And that's the danger. If an influencer all of a sudden says, oh, you got to buy this and you got to buy this, their following might well dip. But that's what you're saying. It's actually a sales thing where you can click on and watch a salesperson sell to you.
Yeah.
I guess it depends on your appetite to watch something like that. So, I mean, I feel like, I don't really know much about the industry, but I feel like telesales dropped when online shopping became a thing. So when people were selling on TV, it's because you either go to a shop or you watch on TV, what can I get? It's a good deal. Whereas now you can go online, you can search for specific things. So how much of your time are you willing to spend to watch someone selling things you may not even be interested in? There might be one top or one piece of jewelry you want, but they're not talking about that for another hour, or you don't know when it's coming in the schedule. But there's definitely a way around it. I think it is a clever idea and it could work.
Well, I think that's where the technology comes into it more than the TV could, right? You could literally have an agenda on the side that you know, if you live stream it and then have it to watch back, people can just like jump to 1743 to see the latest denim outfits or something. I think it would be interesting as a person who doesn't love shopping, but obviously you need to get outfits. So if I saw someone, and the thing is, you could have different salespeople of different sizes as well. So that would be another way to follow it, is to go, I'll just follow this guy's about my size. I'll watch a few of his different outfits, and there's a casual look, there's a formal look, there's a new winter look. All right, I'll grab that outfit, boom, have it sent to my door. It looks, that's a good look, a good combination. I'd be interested in that, just to speed it up so I don't have to go to the shops and book a slot or anything.
Yeah. Don't you think the real where it really comes in, and I think you can do it in some places. I don't know, but product placement within entertainment has been a thing for a while, right? So in the program you're watching, the car pulls up and you see the full car, and then the badge comes there, and
it's just going to casually eat my Pringles right now.
but you know that those guys paid for that slot. But I still believe, and maybe it's already happening, and I think because they've been talking about it for a while, but whatever you're seeing on screen, to be able to search while you're watching and buy it. So if you're watching a program and you like what the actress is wearing, they should up should pop something, click on it, oh, I want that, buy it.
Yeah, well, they're that way with still image. So obviously on Instagram, you just tap and people can tag their outfits. And one of the most recent things, updates for Instagram, was then being able to directly buy via the platform. So previously, if I was trying to sell you this shirt, I was like, I could tag it as TM Lewis, but then I'd have to put a link in the bio, or you'd have to go off Instagram to go and buy it and to look for it. Whereas now they're starting to go, you can just buy this shirt via their Instagram platform. So they're becoming a bit of a marketplace as well, right? Which then just, reduces that friction of just going, oh, I like what he's... So they don't even have to sell you at that point to what you were saying, Siraj, of like, I'll just make a video in my nice outfit. Hope a lot of people, even if 1% of them go, oh, that's a cool shirt, or those are cool sneakers, tap, boom, buy. You've got some Air Jordans on the way. And they're earning, it's trackable, and they're earning commission off it as well. So yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see the different ways people can adapt.
There's definitely some startups doing that whole video tech as well. So when you watch someone on YouTube, you can just say, oh, I like that, click it. And as long as it's been put into the system, you can buy it there as well. So same thing as Instagram.
Yeah, I've often thought what might be interesting for stores to do is to, and I think they do it in some ways, is to just try and enable influencers. So it's like, come down to the Nike store. We have a studio set up. We've got the camera and the film stuff there. You just come and try on the outfits, and then we'll send you all the photos and everything. And it's just part of the experience. So the Nike store becomes, as much as trying on shoes, there's also an area or to go and try on outfits and get your copies and make your little video. And I think a lot of them have started adding like very visual displays and so forth. So people feel like they want to encourage people, like very Instagrammable stores and so forth. But I wonder if they then start encouraging. So like the China store that's getting their salespeople to live stream, they set up a platform where it becomes very easy. Plug your phone in, hit your live stream, off you go, you're on your channel. And oh, I'm in the Nike store today, guys, and with a lovely background and trying on these outfits. And then they just and then someone's there to help you set up an affiliate program and to connect it and to make sure you get your commission if it sells and so forth. So maybe that's the other way of building a marketing into your store. And I think stores need to become an experience rather than just a pure sales thing. Maybe that's another part of it. Cool. Well, I think that'll probably wrap us up for time, guys. I think we've done well there. So I guess thank you very much, everyone, for listening, for us having a bit of a business chat. We're here every week doing this, so please join in, both on Spotify, but if you want to see our lovely faces, if you're on the podcast at the moment, come over to YouTube and so forth. We're everywhere. We're always happy to get recommendations on topics and speakers and so forth. We've got a few coming up in the future, which should be quite interesting, but please feel free to reach out or give us any feedback. We're happy to take improvements to the show and so forth as well. But thanks everybody so much for listening and having a coffee with us. And we look forward to talking business with you next week. Cheers, guys.
Thanks.
Bye. Cheers. Bye.